Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
There's no question that BYU kicked off the college football season on the right foot. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Happy to get a brand new week off and rolling. Out of the studio yesterday, due to Labor Day. But now we're back at it. And the big story last night, it was college football. College football being back on primetime, nonetheless. And if you're a Cougar fan, you're riding high today because I really didn't know what to make of this game last night. BYU-Navy, primetime kickoff. Navy had a very inexperienced quarterback, but I expected the defense to be, again, the Amatalolo defense. And the Cougars had absolutely no problems moving the football, picking up a 55-3 win. And it became obvious very early in this game that BYU was superior. And I think it has to make BYU fans a little bit sad today. Because you got an 8-game schedule. And as far as Kalani Sitake's time at the helm, it's been lackluster. But this was the season where Sitake was supposed to turn things around. And in having Phil Still on this show about a month ago, we said this is the best team that Sitake has had since taking over in Provo. And unfortunately, you look at the schedule and you're going to see vast improvement from BYU. If you watch enough Cougar football, just like what you saw last night, Navy's not a horrible team. And again, there are some variables, but BYU came to play. And this was a school whose season, we had no idea if they were even going to play. Right, they were trying to put together a schedule the best they possibly could. And that's why I had all the respect in the world for Sitake and this BYU football program of the offseason. I mean, really, this was a team you had no idea what was going to happen. Could they muster up enough games? They get Navy, that's no easy task. It did help that BYU was able to prepare a couple of weeks, few weeks out for the option. You'd always rather have Navy to start the season than you would in the middle of the season. Especially the week after you play Navy, bad things can happen. Really, bad things can happen when you play a team with the option, a team that likes to cut block. Typically, you get beaten up. But it's not as if BYU had all offseason to prepare for Navy. They really didn't. They had no idea that's who they were going to open up the season with. Zach Wilson looks phenomenal. 13 of 18, 232 yards and two touchdowns. Gunnar Romney put up great numbers. 4 catches, 134 yards and a touchdown. And now the Cougars are 1-0. Last night's game was so odd. If you didn't watch it, here's a game in Maryland. There's no flyover. There's no pregame rituals that you see when you're watching Navy or Army at home. You didn't get any of that. It almost felt like an exhibition. And if you're not a big BYU fan, you were probably disinterested in this game by halftime because the Cougars looked that good. Now what's up next for BYU? September 19th, they travel on the road to take on Army. First home game will come September 26th against Troy. And then they have UTSA, Houston, Texas State, Western Kentucky. And then they'll wrap up the season against UNA, North Alabama. That's all the way in November. So a short slate for BYU. Wouldn't surprise me one bit if the Cougars run through the schedule unbeaten. But they're just not going to get a lot of national attention because of the lack of schedule, the lack of strength of schedule. But nonetheless, if you're a Cougar fan, you had something to smile about last night. College football is back, and we have a big week of football in general, not just college. But the NFL will start Thursday night, 2 days away. No preseason football. We're going to dive right into it. Teams got down to the 53-man limit over the weekend. Here's my biggest worry with the NFL. We are going to have weeks of bad football. Because even when we get a preseason, it takes 3 weeks before we start seeing top-notch football played on both sides of the ball. With no preseason, and really, the worst part is we really didn't have a chance to look at position battles. I mean, if you have a favorite team, I'm sure you have been glued to everything that's happening with your favorite team. But there are always going to be a lot of question marks and fun storylines regarding other teams at certain positions. For instance, Washington cutting Adrian Peterson. Adrian Peterson then signing with the Detroit Lions. We didn't get to see a competition battle. And with Darius Geis going down, being suspended rather, and then released, thought for sure AP would make the Washington squad. See, these are storylines that floated under the radar because we did not have preseason football. So today, we're going to start by talking about three divisions, and we're going to do this over the next 3 days. We'll take 3 to 4 divisions, and then we're going to play over-under. Right now, the Vegas line for both Kansas City and Baltimore is set at over-under 11.5. Now, I want you to remember what I just said about no preseason football and the idea that it is going to take 3 to 4 weeks for teams to be playing their best brand of football. That could affect wins over and under, no question. Today we'll talk about the AFC West. We have to talk about the AFC West. Obviously, all roads go through the defending Super Bowl champs in Kansas City, but after that, it gets interesting. The Chargers bitten by the injury bug once again with Derwin James. Still look pretty good on paper, but you have Justin Herbert now waiting behind Tyrod Taylor. It's a fun team to talk about. The Raiders, their first year in Las Vegas. And then you have the Broncos, who apparently have found their franchise quarterback. So I think over-under win totals in the AFC West is going to be a fun topic. We'll also talk AFC East. Remember, Tom Brady no longer lives there. And we'll also talk about the NFC East, the Dallas Cowboys, the front runner, and they'll open up their season Sunday night at SoFi Stadium, the home of the Rams and the Chargers, which had its ribbon cutting today. No fans in the stands, but boy, I'll tell you, that stadium looks immaculate. Looks incredible. Let's take a look at the national sports headlines, and we'll begin with the NFL. The Cleveland Browns are rewarding Kareem Hunt with a 2-year contract and a $13 million extension. Now, terms were not disclosed, but the extension is worth $13.2 million, and $8.5 of that is guaranteed. Hunt signed a second-round tender to stay in Cleveland, and now he's under contract for the next 3 seasons. And I think it works out very well for both parties. Remember, the Browns were looked down upon when they decided to give Kareem Hunt another chance after everything that happened in Kansas City. Hunt is a ball player. There's no question. Now he can play behind Nick Chubb. It's a great 1-2 punch. And you think back to how productive Kareem Hunt was when he was in Kansas City. The Chiefs won back-to-back Super Bowls if they have Hunt. It's possible. That's how important he was to that Chiefs team. So the Browns decided to buy low, and now they have a backup for the next 2 years. Great 1-2 punch with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. That was official earlier today. Leonard Fournette, who is now a new member of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, made a comment today saying that, quote, "For the first time in my life, I really have a quarterback, so that's an eye-opener for me. Not a lot of pressure is going to come on me." And I think many people took this as a slight today because he played along Blake Bortles, Nick Foles, Gardner Minshew. Now he's got Tom Brady. And there was a carousel of quarterbacks over the last couple of seasons in Jacksonville. And as we have seen over the last 3 years, that is the epitome of a dumpster fire of a franchise. A team that was on the brink of getting to the Super Bowl, and they have plummeted ever since, and now they're back in rebuild mode when they hit the draft lottery multiple times. You can take that as a slight if you want. I don't think Leonard Fournette said anything negative, but when you make a comment like that, you're betting on yourself now. Fournette's time in Tampa Bay better be successful if he wants another contract after making a comment like that. Basically throwing his past teammates under the bus, taking no blame for himself. Was there a lot of pressure on Fournette? Absolutely. But look, there was a lot of pressure on Fournette at LSU, and his last campaign was horrible. So take it for what it's worth. I'm just saying, when a guy makes that kind of statement, He's really betting on himself. I thought that was interesting today. That's a quick look at the national headlines. Let's look at the scoreboard. We have some important NBA games coming up. In fact, here in just a moment, the Heat and the Bucks will tip off. Could be the final hurrah for Milwaukee. They avoided the four-game sweep, but Miami still leads 3-1 in a series where the Heat have just looked good. They found ways to win when Jimmy Butler isn't playing well. I don't think you can count the Bucks out just yet. Remember, no home court advantage. That plays a factor. But the Heat looking to punch their ticket to the Eastern Conference Finals. Also coming up tonight, Game 3 between the Lakers and the Rockets. Houston, they take Game 1 in blowout form. The Lakers had an opportunity to blow out Houston in Game 2. The Rockets made it interesting. The Lakers held tight. LeBron and AD were great in Game 2. It's a pivotal Game 3. I think it's 73% of the time the team that wins Game 3 when it's tied 1-1 wins the series. And we saw last night the Clippers taking care of the Nuggets. They now have the upper hand in that series. Essentially, in this Laker-Rockets series, it's the best 3 out of 5. So I think Houston's done exactly what they wanted to do, shorten the series. But it is an important game for both teams. Tip-off for that game tonight is set for 7 p.m., Let's take a look at the scores in Major League Baseball. Only one game going on right now, and that's Philadelphia and Boston. Philly leads this 4-3 in the bottom of the fifth inning, and I have a stat for you that is just insane regarding Bryce Harper, who has quietly been very, very good this year. Bryce Harper so far in this game, one walk, one run at two at-bats. Bryce Harper has reached a base in every game except one so far this year. I mean, that's impressive. It's a very impressive stat. His OBP is close to 500 so far this season. Phillies right now up on Boston, 4-3, that one at the bottom of the fifth inning. Still to come. In fact, right now we're getting the Nationals and the Rays, 4:05 start time there. Washington still 10 games under 500. Their playoff hopes look as dim as ever. Tampa Bay at 28-14, top of the AL East. Coming up at 4:10, Kansas City at Cleveland. The Astros will play host to the A's. This is a potential AL Championship Series. Houston will throw Zach Greinke on the mound tonight. And while the A's have been just dominant in this division so far, they only hold a three-game lead in the win column over the Astros. 4.5 overall. But I really, really like that matchup, especially this late in the year. And with Houston throwing Zach Greinke, sign me up for that contest. Houston and Oakland. That one's coming up here in about 20 minutes. We get the Twins and the Cardinals at 4:30. The Yankees will take on the Blue Jays at 4:37. And this is an important game because the Yankees right now 2.5 back of the Blue Jays in the AL East. No one could have predicted that. There's no way. Toronto at 23-18. The Yankees at 21-20 after a smoking hot start. 5 o'clock hour, White Sox, Pirates, Red Sox and the Phillies in Game 2 of their doubleheader. We get the Marlins and the Braves, the Brewers and the Tigers, Mets and Orioles. 6 o'clock tonight, Angels take on the Rangers. We get the Reds and the Cubs. 7 o'clock, Game 2 of a doubleheader between the Astros and the A's. And then to close us out, nightcap West Coast baseball, Rockies Padres with Mike Clevenger on the mound. Clevenger 0-1 in a Padre uniform with a 3 ERA. The Rockies at 20-21 trying to climb to the 500 mark. The Dodgers will take on the Diamondbacks at 7:40. And in the nightcap, it is the Giants who are 21-21. Taking on the Mariners, who have also played better baseball as of late. That's a quick look at what's happening in the national sports scene. Coming up on the show today, we're going to catch up with Coach John Famalo of the Emory Spartans. Emory was dominant Friday night, really just taking it to Union. 54-35 was the final score. The game was not that close. Mercy rule was in effect the entire fourth quarter. You can get your complete game recap right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. But we'll talk to Coach Famalo about that, and we'll give you an update on everything happening locally. That's straight ahead right here on this edition of Drive Time Sports. More coming up right after this.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. And we will begin with high school soccer. Today at 4 p.m., the Carbon Lady Dinos will travel on the road to take on the Richfield Wildcats in a highly important Region 12 showdown. Carbon will enter 2-0 in league play in winners of four of their last five games. In division action, Carbon has outscored their opponents 13-1, picking up victories over San Juan and South Sevier. Now, today's opponent, Richfield, is also 2-0, and they have been lights out so far in league play, picking up wins over San Juan and Grand, outscoring their opponents 11-0. In Region 12 right now, three teams hold a record of 2-0. That's Carbon, Richfield, and Emory. Three other teams hold a record of 0-2. That's San Juan, Grand, and South Sevier. And that makes this week a very interesting week for the Lady Dinos. Once they get past Richfield this afternoon, they'll take on Grand on Thursday. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will have the results from today's game as soon as it becomes available. Now, the Emory Lady Spartan soccer team will also be in action at home this afternoon as they take on San Juan. Emory has picked up victories over Grand and South Sevier to start off league play, outscoring those two opponents by a grand total of 9-2. Following today's game against San Juan, Emory will then take on Richfield, also at home on Thursday. And then next Tuesday, a contest on the road against Carbon. And that sets the stage for a very important three-game stretch for the Lady Spartans. Again, start time for today's game against San Juan is scheduled to begin at 4 p.m. We move over to volleyball, and today the Emory Lady Spartans will take on Millard as they take a break from region action, traveling on the road tonight for a start time set for 7 p.m. Emory is looking to rebound from a loss last Thursday on the road against Carbon following tonight's contest against Millard, which is set for 7 p.m. The Lady Spartans will take the remainder of the week off. Next week, they'll continue league play as they take on the Richfield Wildcats a week from tonight in a region tilt, and that'll be the final game of a three-game homestand. Emory, right now dealing with a road-heavy schedule, will play 6 of 7 games on the road before returning home on Thursday, September 17th, against San Juan. Again tonight, the Emory Lady Spartan volleyball team traveling on the road to take on the Millard Eagles. Start time for that contest is set for 7 p.m. Sticking with Emory High School, today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll be joined by head football coach John Famalo. Emory picked up their second consecutive victory Friday night on KOAL as they topped the Union Cougars 54-35 in a game where Emory scored 41 unanswered points. Now, Friday's victory moves Emory to 2-2 on the season, and they'll have an opportunity to climb the 500 barrier when they travel on the road to take on a very good Juab Wasp team. That'll be this Friday on KOAL. Again, today on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we'll catch up with Coach John Famalo to talk about last Friday's win and this Friday's upcoming contest. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
You watch the games. You follow the team. You wear the colors with pride. And you have questions, and only one man can answer them. Get the answers to the tough questions.
It was a great night for high school football on Friday. The Emory Spartans picking up a win, bulldozing their way past the Union Cougars 54-35. In this game, Emory scores 41 unanswered. Three touchdowns from Jace Curtis, two from Jace Mangum. All around, just a stellar performance from the Spartans. And joining us right now over the phone to talk about that and a look ahead of this Friday's game against Juab, we have head coach John Famalo on the phone right now. And coach, as always, it is a pleasure. Thank you.
I appreciate having me on, Jordan.
Definitely, coach. We got to talk following the post game, or following the victory rather, on Friday night against Union. Still just a stellar performance. When I go back and I take a look at the final statistics from that night, I'm sure from an offensive standpoint, there's not too much more you could have asked being the head coach of this team.
No, I thought we were efficient. I think over 400 yards offense, 300 yards passing. So, pretty good job overall. I mean, for our offensive group, by far our best performance, and that's kind of the potential we have, and hopefully we can continue to keep it rolling.
You mentioned, coach, post game the reads that Riker is now making and going through his progression, and I'm sure it was only a matter of time before that actually came to fruition, with him actually getting some starts now with the varsity level. Completely different than playing 7-on-7s in the summer, and even though he is a junior, I think sometimes it's easy to forget that he only played not even a full half as the starter at the varsity level last year. So now that he's got four games under his belt, when you watch him in practice on Monday, is it just a different vibe?
Oh, it is. I mean, you can see the confidence and the things that he's looking at and being able to read, and I think the game's slowing down for him. And so, I think this is kind of the record we were kind of expecting, and it's nice to see him to continue to progress and I say we forget that he missed out on last season. So, like I say, these first few games, I think he's starting to settle in, starting to understand some things and see some things a lot easier and better. And so, it's been a good progression, as it seems, worked throughout the first few games here.
Now, while we talk about Riker and his improvement, and we can talk about Jace and his three touchdowns, Jace Curtis and Jace Mangum both were phenomenal in this game. But, Coach, it seems like every conversation that you and I have had, it starts and it ends with what you guys can do up front. And I don't think it can be overstated that these kids up front on Friday night were absolutely brilliant on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah, no, and it's been fun to see these kids have some success up there, because these are kids that have played since they've been a sophomore. So to see them, get beat up a little bit as sophomores and even as juniors, to now see them can continue to grind and physically get better. They're just working really good as a unit. That's what's the impressive thing is, a lot of these kids, they just genuinely like each other. They worked out throughout the whole summer together, and so you can kind of see some of that stuff translating on the field as their camaraderie and their being able to work as a unit and one. And it's been a huge part of the two wins we have so far.
Coach, if we talk about the defensive side of the ball, you and I did have a lengthy conversation about that after the game, I know, on Friday night, so we don't have to rehash everything. But, I mean, just all in all, such a tremendous performance from this team. They managed to rebound early after giving up another big one, very similar to what happened in the ALA game. And then from that point on, Union just hit a wall. I mean, they could literally do nothing. If it was the secondary batting down passes, if it was the front seven creating some havoc. I mean, he had a very active running quarterback in Boone Latham, and even though he didn't play in the second half, he really didn't have anything brewing for him in the second quarter.
No, I felt like, once they settled in after we gave up that big one, our kids really settled down. They understood their assignments a little better. And, physically, I just think they continued to pound away, and they got confidence as the game went on, and being able to contain him, especially in that second quarter, and when he was knocked out, and made a little bit different game. But they continue to fight, and I was happy with the way they played, my front four and my linebackers.
And what was the locker room like Friday night, Coach?
I think the kids are just excited to see success. It's been a while since they've seen that, on a consistent basis, and so I think the kids are, starting to understand what it takes to win ball games, and hopefully they can continue to have good attitudes and continue to build each other up. And no matter how it goes, I think kids are on board with one another. That's one thing I really appreciated, is that the kids have really stuck together, and no matter what, whether win or lose, they've always had good attitudes about it.
Again, Coach John Fumalo is our guest right now, head coach of the Emory Spartan football team. And, Coach, I'm curious to see how that success brews over into Friday's game. This is a JUAB squad. Got to go on the road to JUAB, which is no easy task. They'll enter at 3-1, fresh off a 35-point win over South Sevier. And when you look at common opponents and just the way things have played out, the 42-7 win over South Sevier, I guess it was to be expected. So when you look at what is sitting in front of you on Friday night, what stands out to you with this JUAB team?
They're always well coached. They're really disciplined. They're really physical. I think they've got a tradition of winning. And so, again, a lot of that, that helps understanding and knowing how to win. And so, it's one of those things we're trying to pattern ourselves after. And so it's going to be a challenge for our kids to be able to handle their physicality. But, I think our kids are up to the challenge, and it's a good team. We just got to be able to put our best foot forward and be able to, talked about it Friday night, not hurt ourselves. And, I think they're going to come out and hit you pretty hard right at the beginning. And we just got to be able to take that and try to give it back and, hopefully give ourselves an opportunity to win the game when it gets down to it.
They have so many different kids that can hurt you. I don't believe that they have the level of talent that they had last year, Coach, but when you look at the amount of the skill position players, it's kind of hard to pinpoint one and game plan for one kid in particular, which I know is a little bit different than, say, ALA or Union, because it was as simple as looking at Boone Latham or Hiram Morley and saying, okay, if you contain this guy right here, you got a pretty good chance of slowing him down defensively. I don't get that vibe when I look at this JUAB team. They got a lot of kids that can do different things.
Yeah, they do. They got a lot of their skill guys are good, and they're long. They're lanky kids, hard to tackle. And so, I don't know if there's any one that's really stuck out that we got to make sure we game plan for. But
At the same time, it makes it a little bit more difficult because any given night, it could be one of those kids that, you know, has a breakout night. And so we got to make sure, again, we play disciplined football. Everybody knows their assignments and try to keep them in check. I think their power, their best aspect of their game is probably their running. And so we got to make sure, again, we stop the run as much as we can and force them to throw a little bit more. And, you know, hopefully that will play into come some of our strengths. And, you know, we'll kind of play that chess game between offense and defense.
Yeah, Coach, when you talk about forcing a team to throw the football more, I mean, is that something that's by design? Is that what you want? I mean, do you want a team to come out and throw the ball 25 to 30 times on you opposed to running the ball 30 to 35 times?
Yeah, I mean, again, a team like that, it's physical and big up front, I think you do. You want to make sure you put 7-8 guys in the box and you just stop the run and challenge them to throw the ball around a little bit. I think at the high school level, that's a tough thing to do. We found that at times, that throw the ball is not always the easiest thing to do. And so, you know, I think their quarterback's pretty good, but again, I'd rather have them throwing the ball around than running and really pounding at us and grinding. So, you know, that's kind of the game plan we're taking in as we go into this football game.
Going into week 5, this is the final non-region game of the season, and I know they all count with the RPI. It's a little bit different than it has been. But, Coach, still, when you look at this team going into week 5 of the non-region season, are they where you expected them? Are they further ahead? Did you anticipate this kind of success over the last couple of weeks? I mean, what's your assessment of your team now going into week 5?
You know, I think as a coaching staff, we looked at the schedule and felt like, you know, we could be, you know, 3-1 or you know, 2-2, somewhere in there. And so, you know, I think we're on par with what we were expecting, but pleasantly surprised with, you know, just the performance of our kid. You know, you see it throughout the summer, you see the hard work, and, you know, you just wonder how they're going to translate into, you know, the coming year. And so seeing that some of the stuff from the off-season stuff that we did translate now to, you know, the end of the season, you know, it feels good as a coach to know that, you know, some things are starting to translate, which in the past it seems like we struggled, whether it was injuries or other things. But so it's nice to be able to see these kids, you know, fall through with a lot of the hard work that they put in and be able to see some of those results come through.
Is it contagious? I mean, are you seeing a different level of excitement even from the underclassmen, the freshmen and the sophomores?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's not too often that we've won, you know, a freshman sophomore game, a JV game, and a varsity game in a week. And so, you know, we've seen that 2 weeks in a row. And so, you know, our lower level is having some success. And so, you know, success breeds success. And, you know, that's kind of what we're hopefully, you know, seeing as we continue to grow this program and try to get it to where we want it and, you know, we can be.
Well, we'll talk about the injuries, Coach. I know at the end of the game on Friday night, we talked about Josh Olson. I mean, that's a big loss, be it on either side of the ball. Any update on Josh?
I know he's going to see the doctor again today. He had an x-ray. It's not broken, so that's good. And I think there's probably some ligaments that are stretched or, you know, a little dinged. And so we may not see him this week. I think it's a day-to-day thing with him. But, you know, yesterday at practice, he was feeling pretty good, and he didn't go. But it's feeling a whole lot better than it was Friday. And so that's good news. Hopefully he can continue to heal and heal quickly because, again, he's a big part of our team and provides a lot of energy and just a good football player on both sides of the ball for us.
Yeah, no question. Outside of Josh, Coach, any other injuries of note?
Nothing too serious. Again, we're 4 games in. Kids are starting to get banged up, whether it's ankles, knees, and things like that. And so just trying to take care of those things and trying to stay healthy. But for the most part, you know, I'm feeling pretty good about where we're at.
Well, Coach, I definitely appreciate you taking out the time again today. Congratulations on the win this past Friday, and we'll see you at the game at UM.
Hey, thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Again, that's Coach John Famalo with the Emory Sport and Football Team taking out the time to join us. Emory's going to return to the field. Final non-region game coming up this Friday. It'll be a road trip to JUAB. We're going to break for just a moment. More coming up when we return. We'll talk more football. The NFL is going to open up the season in 2 days right here on KOAL. We'll talk about that and more when we return right here on this Tuesday edition of Drive Time Sports on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
Some news coming out of Orlando, the bubble. The Bucks are going to be without Giannis Antetokounmpo for tonight's game. Elimination contest against the Heat. He's been ruled out due to an ankle. Travis, this is bad news for the Bucks.
Not good news at all for Milwaukee. They probably should have lost the other night. They gutted probably. That one out.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what you have to do. But I think tonight it's the end. Without Giannis, I just don't think that Miami's going to drop that one. You know, again, back-to-back.
It's tough because, again, home court advantage, remember, it's a non-factor here, right? Milwaukee would be at home facing elimination if all things were equal. Who knows if they would actually be down 3-1. But the bottom line is, with Giannis out and there being no home court and the swag that the Heat play with, yeah, I mean, I have to believe that this is it for Milwaukee. Now, if by chance it's not, if by chance Milwaukee gets a win tonight, you know what this could do for confidence from both sides? I mean, they get a win tonight, and Giannis comes back in game 6. We may have a team rally from a 3-0 deficit. I think tonight's game is that important for Miami. They need to close the door tonight.
I'm going
to
say if Miami loses tonight, Milwaukee pushes this to 7.
I think so. If Giannis plays in game 6.
Yeah, if Giannis plays in game 6, then Miami's walking a tight rope. But I just don't see that happening. I think Miami closes out tonight. They just got too much swag like you talk about.
All right, let's move away from the NBA. Let's talk NFL because coming up this Thursday night right here on KOAL, Texans Chiefs. Boy, it seems like forever ago we didn't have any sports to talk about. We didn't know when we would get sports back. The NFL hasn't missed a beat outside of its preseason games, and I do believe that's going to be the league's own detriment. I believe we will see some bad football coming out in week 1, and that leads me to believe that some of the over-unders, which we do every year, could be drastically affected. Because what team is going to rise to the occasion, right? Which team's going to start off slow? You know, you have a uber-talented team, let's say in Kansas City. They could definitely start off slow. You lose a game or two here, and that affects over-unders, right? A team that's realistically could have been 13-3 is 11-5. Well, that changes things drastically, and I wonder if we're going to have that type of effect. So, again, we're going to do 3-4 divisions each day leading up to the season opener. Today we'll do 3 divisions, and we'll start with the AFC West because, well, that's where the defending Super Bowl champions sit. And according to the Vegas odds, Kansas City and Baltimore, they have the 2 highest numbers, 11.5. Over-under, Kansas City, 11.5 coming off a Super Bowl championship.
Got to get to 12 to win that bet. I will take the under at 11.5. I think they're right at 11.
I got to take the over, and the reason I got to take the over is because I don't see too many teams getting to 12 wins. Someone has to do it.
One team has to, yeah.
You would think. I mean, so Kansas City at 12-4, that makes a lot of sense. And as far as the personnel, and I remember going back post-Super Bowl, what would the Chiefs look like this year? They paid Patrick Mahomes. They paid Chris Jones. Travis Kelce's in a good spot right now from a contract standpoint as well. So they're pretty much the same team that finished at the very top last year. And then you add Clyde Edwards-Helaire replacing Damian Williams. And I believe immediately you've upgraded what you have out of the backfield. And so to me, there's no chance, barring a massive injury to Patrick Mahomes, I don't believe there's any chance the Chiefs do not finish at the top of the AFC West. And if I believe they're that much better, and obviously so does Vegas, because they're putting the Broncos, Chargers, and Raiders all at 7.5.
Yeah, those teams have no chance.
No, I mean, seriously, that's 6 wins. You have to believe the Chiefs will be favored in 6 division games right there.
They won't lose a division game.
Well, and if that's the case, to me, I think they get over 11.5. If they go unbeaten in division play.
Yeah, they won't lose a division game. They're outside a division, I think, is the AFC East, which they should take care of the AFC East.
So you changing your mind?
I'm changing my mind. After, you know, looking at the schedule and that, yeah, they're going to get over. I think they get 13. Let's go 13-3.
Okay, let's move on to the Chargers. Eventually, I believe the Chargers make a quarterback change. Tyrod Taylor, I think he gives them some stability. I love Tyrod Taylor. I have for a long time. I think he is the type of quarterback that you want if you have a rookie marinating on the bench. But still, in this division, at some point in time, the pressure being in Los Angeles, which is different than San Diego, it just is, having a quarterback that you selected in the top 6, who had a lot of success in that same state in college. Eventually, Anthony Lynn's going to have to pull the trigger. And when that happens, the Chargers encounter some problems.
Yeah, the outside noise will eventually get to him.
It has to
make the change. Yeah.
It has to. Because as much as I love Tyrod Taylor, we know what Tyrod is at this particular time.
You don't draft that kid that high if you're not going to play him.
Exactly. Taylor's going to be able to help their players, hopefully, on the other side of the ball. I'm talking about Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram. I know there's no Derwin James, which is a big deal. But when you look at the playmakers that the Chargers have on the defensive side of the ball, Tyrod has to do a good enough job to keep those guys fresh. Because that's how the Chargers are going to win games. They're going to do it with their defense. One or two frustrating games each year keeps Anthony Lynn's squad out of the playoffs. 7.5. Yeah, I'm going to take the over because I think they are the second best team in the division. I think they can get to 9 wins. I don't know if that's enough to get into the playoffs. Maybe so because the playoffs are extended this year. So if I'm going to take the Chiefs at the over, give me the Chargers at the over as well.
I'm going to take the under because I think they're 7-9.
Yeah, that would be the under. That half game would be that important.
I'm taking under. I think that's a 7-9 team.
Let's move on. We'll talk about the Denver Broncos. A lot of buzz around this team. Obviously, people here in this state, they love it, right? Maybe, just maybe John Elway has his guy now in Drew Locke. Pat Shurmur, he's brought in a few playmakers. I mean, they got Melvin Gordon, a former Charger. They go ahead and they draft Jerry Jeudy. I still believe this team is going to take some lumps. Vic Fangio is a coach that I'm a huge fan of. His defense has a few concerns surrounding Von Miller. 7.5 Denver, I'm taking the under. I think the Broncos finish fourth place in this division. I'm going to take them under the Raiders, under 7.5 wins.
I'm with you. It's under. I just don't see enough there offensively for this team to win 8-9 games in that division. I think they're the worst team in that division.
Okay, so that brings us to the Raiders. They are also sitting at 7.5. The relocation does not make them any better.
Okay, no.
And this is the point that I have to try to make to people often. I understand there's a lot of excitement around this Raider team because they're in Las Vegas. Relocating does not make you that much better. They have a little bit more offensive pop. I understand that. They go out. They pay Corey Littleton from the Rams. He looks great. Kai Wachowski is also an anchor for the linebacker spot. I get it. But when you play in a division that has the Chiefs, the Chargers, and even though the Broncos, I think, win 6 games, 5 games, somewhere around that mark, they are still on point with the Raiders. I think they're the third best team in the division. I take the under because they're at 7.5. I think they go 7-9.
Yeah, I'm under too. To start the season, they go at Carolina versus New Orleans, at New England versus Buffalo, at Kansas City versus Tampa Bay.
Yeah, you got to take that into consideration.
Yeah, there's no way this team gets past 7 wins. Under.
And as far as the relocation goes, with everything that's happening with limited fan capacity and some stadiums not allowing anyone, that changes things as well. That changes some of the momentum.
It does.
I mean, I was in the stadium, the Rams, their first game back in L.A. against the Seahawks. That stadium was rocking, and it started to fade because the Rams just weren't that good of a team. Defensively, they got the win over Seattle, and it shocked everyone, but that starts to fade, right? No team is going to have that momentum built in the stadium out of the gate. That doesn't exist this year. So even though the Raiders have relocated, I understand there's a lot of expectations around this Raiders squad. People are excited. Doesn't carry over. Third best team in that division, under. So I go Chiefs over, Chargers over, Broncos, Raiders under.
I went Chiefs over and everybody else under.
Okay, let's stick at the AFC. We'll move to the AFC East.
I know this division, Jordan.
You know it very, very well. We also know that Tom Brady no longer lives in this division. What does that mean? Well, New England right now is picked at 9.5. That's their over-under. Buffalo is second at 9. Tom Brady's record against Buffalo when he played for the Patriots, 32-3.
Owned him, yeah.
That's what his record was. For 108 games, this guy played against the Jets, Dolphins, and Bills. 108 times, okay? 86-22. That was his record.
And that's where the Patriots made their living, inside the division, not dropping games in the division, getting, you know, 5 to 6 wins, you know, in that division yearly, and then all they have to do is win, you know, 3 more outside or 4 more, and they're getting byes.
Yeah, he went 29-7 against the Jets. He went 23-12 against the Dolphins. Okay, so with that being said, does the division still run through New England?
I think Cam Newton is going to have a good year.
I do too.
And I don't... It's a little bit of a drop-off because defensively they lost a lot of players who were sitting out with the COVID thing, that scenario. So I'm going to say the reign is over for New England. Buffalo wins the division. 9.5. They are under. I think they get to 9.
I think they could get to 10 wins and still not win the division. I'm very high on Buffalo. I'm very high on Josh Allen.
I think this is his legit year.
Yeah, he's got a terrific defense. Tre'Davious White, I mean, that's just it's a fantastic defense front to back. I think Buffalo wins the AFC East. I think New England presses them. Buffalo, they're set at 9. I think they definitely get over because, I believe they're going to win the division. I think they can get to 11 wins, and I think they can edge New England. I'm going to actually take New England. I'm going to take the under because I agree with you. 9 wins, that seems reasonable for the Patriot team.
It's hard to get – when it's 9.5 like that and I have to get to 10, there's no way I'll take the under every time. So 9-7 is where they're going to sit. Buffalo wins that division. I think Buffalo's 11 wins.
The Jets are at 6.5.
No way. There's no way.
You're hard on the Jets every year, and last year I told you that they would get over. I believe it was 5.5, and I told you they would get over, and they did.
They got to 7.
They got to 7, which didn't do themselves any favors. But you know what? I think the Jets can get to 7 wins this year because, again, Sam Darnold is the real deal. He is. And they grabbed a fantastic prospect. They have someone now, Mekhi Becton, that's going to protect him for years to come.
The offensive line is much improved.
It is.
They don't have the outside threats, I don't think. Le'Veon Bell, you don't know what you're going to get out of them. Defensively, they're going to be okay.
Well, defensively, see, this is where I think they have an issue because Jamal Adams is gone, and let's not forget C.J. Mosley, who was phenomenal. I love C.J. Mosley. He's gone.
Marcus May is going to replace Jamal Adams. Marcus May is not Jamal Adams, but he's good. He's a good player. 6.5, is that what it is you
six
said?
6.5.
All right, we'll go over. 7-9. Same as last year.
This one's tough. This is one of the tougher ones because I do believe the Jets, offensively, they're better than they were last year. I don't think there's any question.
Perryman's going to help. Yeah.
Rashad Perryman, thank you. Yeah, it's another name that you have to mention. Plus, I think they have one of the most overlooked players on the offensive side of the ball and a pass catcher in Chris Herndon.
I was just going to bring him up. Chris Herndon's absolutely fantastic.
He's good. I'm going to take the over. I think the Jets can get to 7 or 8 wins.
The Jets can float around that division and not drop games against, Miami, teams that they should beat. That's what they've done in the past. And split with Buffalo and New England, and then outside that division, their schedule, they could. I'm going to look at it, positively and say they get to 7.
Okay, Miami, 6 wins, over, under.
Under.
Yeah, I don't think the Dolphins get to 7.
I don't think they're that good.
I don't think, Brian Flores did some beautiful, beautiful work last year. But all in all, Buffalo has gotten better. I still think New England is better, and I think the Jets got better as well. So when I look at it, I'm going to say Miami under. So I'm going to go Patriots under, yep. Bills over,
yep.
Jets over,
yeah.
Dolphins under.
We agree on all four.
Let's take a quick commercial break. We'll come back and we'll talk NFC East. That's how we'll wrap up this edition of Drive Time Sports. More straight ahead right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750 with Jordan Buscarini.
They're running down a dream that never would come to me. Running down a dream.
Unfortunately, we are about out of time on this edition of the show. I wanted to continue with the over-unders predictions as far as the NFL is concerned. Tomorrow, we'll start by talking about the NFC East, which, in years past, it's been a very interesting division.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's pretty clear and cut. I mean, Dallas is set at 9.5, Philly's at 9.5, the Giants are at 6.5, Washington at 5.5. I see two teams going over. I see two teams going under.
Yeah, I'm with you, and you can pretty much figure out which two are going over and which two are going under.
Yeah, I think so. So we'll pick it up right there tomorrow here on Drive Time Sports. Before we end, Travis, tonight, predictions. Heat, Bucks, Lakers, Rockets. Who do you have tonight?
I got Miami winning the game. I think Miami wins by 10, and the Los Angeles Lakers will win game 3. I will go Lakers by 8.
Laker-Rockets series has been interesting. So is the Clippers-Nuggets. Last night...
Yeah, well, the referees took over that
game. Oh, they did. They did.
But in the same sense, Denver lost that game at the end of the first half, second quarter, when they were up 12, and the Clippers got it down to 2. They lost the game with 3 minutes and 30 seconds left.
Yeah, but there's so many runs in NBA basketball. I mean, we saw in the Laker-Rocket game, the Lakers were up by, what, 19?
21 was their biggest.
21 points. The Rockets came back and took a 4 or 5 point lead in that game. So you see runs. If I'm a Nugget fan today... Look, I am a firm believer that referees do not cost you games. That was pretty close last night. I mean,
yeah, it was 25-12 in free throws.
Yeah, the Nuggets got no love. And you would expect Jokic to get a couple of calls late in the game, and he just simply didn't.
I don't think he shot any free throws.
It was frustrating, to say the least. If you're a Nugget fan, you were probably extremely frustrated last night.
Yeah, the Rockets style play is just not going to work. They're going to have stretches in this series where they were hot in the third quarter. Fourth quarter, they weren't. They're going to have a stretch during the whole game where they do not shoot the ball well. Lakers will take advantage, because all the Lakers did was score twos, and the Rockets were hitting threes, but it kept it close enough where LeBron and AD took over in the fourth.
You almost feel the same sense in this Clipper-Nugget series. Like, there's a lot of similarities between these two.
Yeah, we know what we're getting. L.A. versus L.A.
Yeah, I think you do. In fact, Jokic, just a stat check, he did shoot 4 free throws last night, but he shot 24 times.
Yeah, he
shot
didn't
24
get any,
times.
Didn't get any calls. So that series... I think that series, I might be wrong, because you thought it was going to be a deep series. I thought it was going to be 5. I think it might be 6.
It might be 6.
Yeah. It might be 6. I don't think it goes 7, but we'll see what happens tomorrow.
And we'll talk about that on tomorrow's show. I want to thank Coach John Famalo for taking out the time to join us. He's Travis Anderson. I'm Jordan Buscarini. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. We are out. NASCAR Live is coming up next.